Good evening. This is the Learning Curve. This week's edition is going to be a rather special edition. We're going to be looking at some of the key points of the barriers to comprehension which prevent learning by you in your life, and also, more importantly, by your children. This is information that we're going to be giving you in this program that'll enable you to really help your child learn and succeed at school and in life. And that's really what this program, The Learning Curve, is about. And each week we'll deal with a particular new aspect of it. So, my name's Roger Boswava, and my partner here, Virginia Koenig. Say good day to our folks, Virginia.
Good day. How is everybody?
Sounds pretty good to me, mate. So, over to you, Virginia. This is your important subject for tonight.
Well, what I want to talk about is there are going to be several learning barriers that we're going to be talking about tonight. The first one is called the purpose and value of the subject. This is the number one cause of losing student interest and attention in class. This is most likely the reason your child did or is doing poorly in a subject. When your child sees no purpose or value in the knowledge, their attention will wander. They can become disruptive to other students around them because their attention is wandering, and they will do miserably and most likely fail that subject. Now I want you to think back to the subjects that you did not do well in. Did you, or even now, do you know the purpose for learning that subject and the value and use of that knowledge in your life? I know there are several subjects that I'm still personally trying to figure out what the value is, but I will get to that. That is for me to work on. So as with life, children need to see a reason for paying attention to the subject. They need to see the value and applicability of the knowledge in order to bother learning it, especially in today's society with so much being demanded of a student's attention. There is so much going on electronically that instant messaging, and I realize that's old, Twitter, and so many things that can just command a student's attention, that they really do have to understand the purpose and value of the subject for them to bother paying attention to it. Have you ever seen your child pay attention to something wholly, fully, just absolutely absorbed by something because they saw the value of it? They saw the applicability of it in their lives, such as maybe learning how to Twitter, learning some computer program, learning some new game, something like that, but they were just totally absorbed in it. That's because it had value to them. That is what we have to impart to our children as far as the subjects in schools are concerned, the value of why they need to get this knowledge. The topic of purpose is a vitally important one. It is because of the purpose one sees in any action that one invests in or chooses not to invest in that one's energy and attention in that action or pursuit. It is a key to succeeding in life. And Roger has something I know he wants to say about intention for studying the subject.
Yes, thanks, Virginia. The other aspect of this subject of purpose is your intention behind studying it. And this can actually quite dramatically pervert how the subject is applied. And you only have to have a look at careers that are in bad repute, such as law or politics, where folks go into the subject saying they're doing one thing, but they misapply the subject. They learned it in order to apply it corruptly in a different manner. American medicine is unfortunately another example of a subject that was learned by many with an ill-conceived intention or a misdirected intention. American medicine, unfortunately, tends to be a little dominated too much by the profit motive. Whereas if you go to Europe, and I know in Australia when I was there, doctors enter the profession and become doctors in order to heal. They actually want to help people, which is a correct intention for that subject. So all subjects do have purposes and value and the reason why you would indulge in learning them, but there is, in addition, the aspect of what is your intention behind studying it. And it needs to be an intention that results in proper application and a worthwhile outcome.
Do you know if your student or your child is suffering from this barrier to comprehension? In other words, not knowing the purpose and value of the subject. Well, the signs and symptoms are, is your child doing poorly in a subject? Is your child being disruptive in class? Are you getting those phone calls or notes home from school saying your child did this, your child did that, they were sent to the principal? Whatever it is, are they being disruptive in class? Does your child think school is boring and useless? Oh, please don't make me go to school. It's boring. I don't want to go. Is it boring and useless? Do you have to drag them, force them, bribe them, whatever it is you have to do to get them to do their homework? Any of those things are signs and symptoms of them not understanding the purpose and value of the subject. So the question becomes, how do you remedy that? Well, very simple, really. Ask your child, do you know why the teacher teaches the subject to you? That accesses their idea of what's the purpose. Why am I learning this? What's the purpose of learning this knowledge? Why do I need to know history? Why do I need to know arithmetic? Why do I need to know whatever it is that they see no purpose for? If your child does not have an answer or has an incomplete answer, go to a large dictionary. None of these pocket dictionaries, and I'm not even sure about the online dictionaries. Go to a large dictionary, or if it's appropriate, depending on your child's age, go to a child's dictionary. Look up the definition of the subject, such as arithmetic or composition or geography or science, whatever the subject happens to be for that child. Look it up. Define that word. Define the subject. Usually by defining the subject, it will help you and your child discover the purpose of why you want to study or why they should be studying this subject. After you've done that, then ask them, can you think of any way that you can apply this knowledge in your life? What you're doing is you are accessing or asking them for the value of the subject to them. Now, the value of the subject is going to be different from person to person. You may value arithmetic or geography for a different reason than I do. And so the same will be for your child. So do not invalidate the value that they place on the subject. If that's what they think is the value of it, that is their value now, at this particular time in their perspective. It will most likely change over time, but please do not invalidate the value they place on this subject. Just be happy they have value. They see value in it. But if your child has no answer or an incomplete answer, give him or her some examples from your own life. Think about how you value that subject, where you apply it in your life. Give them everyday examples of how you use that knowledge. Then invite them to think of examples for themselves. And give them some time to think about it. Don't expect them to blurt out answers. Just be patient. Let them fuzzle through it and they will come to their own understanding. Now, the better way to handle this is actually to prevent it from happening altogether. And the best way to avoid this barrier altogether is to be sure that you and their teacher explain the purpose of the new subject when introducing it and explain its value and use. And also solicit, ask them, what do you think is the value? Why do you think you should be studying this? Where can you use it in your life? The more you get them involved in looking at the purpose and value of the subject, the more you will get them involved in the subject. Okay, on to learning barrier number two, which is missing or wrong definitions. Many parents and teachers use words and symbols but forget to define these new words and symbols before using them. They just start talking and suddenly these words come out, or they might be writing something, these symbols come up. And you know what? You can't just throw out these words and throw out these symbols without defining them, especially if they're brand new for the child. Non-understood words and symbols is another underlying reason for the abandonment of study. Because in the face of a non-understood word or symbol, your child will go mentally blank and they will not be able to act. They will go immobile and they will be unable to perform. What's even worse is they will become unable to absorb any knowledge on that subject from that point forward. They are stuck at that point. Your child will feel stupid and dull. They'll switch off, which I'm sure you know is a huge problem in our schools these days.
Yes, I've got something to say on that, Virginia. I've been dealing with this for many, many years now, and particularly with clients. And there's an interesting example. I gave a demonstration some years ago to JetBlue Airlines here in New York. It was the manager of JetBlue University customer service division. And I wanted to demonstrate to him the importance of this particular barrier and its effect. And I wrote out on a sheet of paper, I said, in the presence of non-defined terms or words, a person is unable to perform, and if forced to act, will likely do so in error. And I wanted him to actually experience the truth of this. So I deliberately created an exercise, and I said, I want you to demonstrate to me, be careful folks out there listening to this, don't drive a car while you run this exercise, because what happens, you'll actually go mentally blank, and if you try and do it, you can become quite emotionally disturbed. Anyway, what I said to him was, I'm going to have you do this exercise, so I want you to demonstrate to me the concept that in the hands of his captors, the prisoner received kind treatment. And I shut up and waited. And he stood there a little dumbfounded. And I could see he was going blank. And he wasn't doing anything. And I looked at him and I says, I know you're not performing. He said, yeah. And I said, so what's the word you don't really have a clear understanding of what I mean when I use it? And he said, what do you actually mean by demonstrate? So we pull out a dictionary and we define the word demonstrate, which in essence means you can act it out or get some bits and pieces and model it or do whatever you want to do to portray it. So he got that cleaned up, and then I looked at him waiting, and he was looking at this phrase, at the hands of, wondering what to and how to, and I said, okay, so let's look at the dictionary. It's actually in a dictionary, that phrase. So once he understood what that meant, which it actually means in the care of or under the control of, he said, oh, that's easy. And he went snap and pop and instantly did a brilliant demonstration of the concept. So I looked at him, I said, so just imagine what the consequences are to a company like yours, where safety is involved, where training people and they're not fully cognizant of what do the words and terms and symbols mean that they're dealing with. Look at the potential catastrophes. So it is an important subject. There's another funny story actually. There was one of my consulting clients, a business situation. There was a lady who had been trained in some diagnostic equipment, and she just wasn't getting it right. She'd been through the training 3 times. She was a valuable employee, but she kept flunking out and getting emotional about this piece of equipment. So I was asked to see what I could do to handle it. So I sat down with her and I said, so do the part of the action here or with the equipment that's giving you the trouble. So she did her little dance and I observed the symptoms that turned on for her, and I observed that she missed something earlier. So I took her back to the part of her training where that aspect of the actions were dealt with, And I said, read to me the instructions that you were trained on and all the materials that you went through to learn this. And as she was reading the instructions and the learning materials, I noticed that she went by each of the commas in the sentence as though they were not there. And I said to her, I said, hold on there. What's the definition of a comma? And she said, it means and. So I said, okay, let's have a look in a dictionary. So commas do not mean and, by the way. I said, where'd you get that definition from? She said, well, my teacher told me that when I was a little kid in school. You know, like an apples, comma, oranges, comma, bananas, comma, means and. And the tragedy is, with that misunderstanding of what a comma means, every sentence that she there ever after came across that had a comma in it, she misunderstood and got wrong. So it was a tremendously emotional experience for both of us. She broke down in tears and began to realize that she wasn't dull after all, wasn't dumb, that she'd actually been given bum data by a teacher. So this is an important subject. You can kill your child's ability to comprehend anything if you don't give the clear understanding of what words mean to them and symbols. Define the new words that you introduce to them and make sure they understand all the words that they run into. There are many stories that we could tell you on this. We actually had a 7.5-year-old child, another client who I introduced this material to, who checked with his son. He was reading a book that he came home from school with, and his father said to him, are there any words in that that you're reading that you don't know the meaning of, Brian? And Brian says, oh yeah, that one and that one and that one and that one. So he and the father went off to Barnes & Noble to get a child's dictionary and let the little fella pick one that he was happy with. He sat on the floor reading it, and he was just switched on. He's got this dictionary saying, wow, look at this, and all these words, wow. That night at home, he was sitting up in his bed, totally aglow, with his now new favorite book, The Dictionary, looking up words. And that's a passion for learning, a child with a purpose. And he's 3 or 4 years older now. He's a stellar student. So this is the power of this piece of information. So use it wisely and well.
So missing or wrong definitions. What are the signs and symptoms of this? Well, is your child unable to absorb the knowledge on a subject? Do they go mentally blank? Do they develop a mind fog? Are they unable to act and apply the knowledge that they're supposedly taking in? And if they're forced to act, do they make errors or do they make wrong decisions? The way to remedy this is while doing homework with them. Ask your child, just as Anthony did with his son, ask your child if there are any words or symbols that they don't understand. Have them point them out. Write them down on a piece of paper. Okay, then, using a large dictionary, and again, I emphasize a large dictionary because that will give you the most complete definitions of a word, or use a child's dictionary if that is more appropriate for your child's age, and help your child to look up the word. Help them to understand how to use a dictionary. Write down all the definitions of the words that they don't understand. Now, not just one definition of a word, because a word can have many, many definitions. Write down all the definitions, all the senses of the word that they don't understand. And have them write it down, because that makes it concrete and it brings it here into the world. Now have your child reread their assignment. Now that they've looked up all those words, have them reread their assignment or reread the story, and you'll be amazed at how much more they can pick up. Now, of course, there is a prevention to this, and the way to prevent this barrier from occurring in the first place is to ensure that you define, or the teacher defines, all new words and or symbols at the time that you use them. Be a good example to your child. When you are finding words that you don't know, if you're reading something or you come across a word that you don't know, look it up. Pull out your dictionary. Say, oh, gee, you know, I don't know the definition of that word. Let's look it up. And you pull out the dictionary and you pick up, you look up that word that you don't understand. Teach your child what it feels like when you don't understand a word or when they don't understand. Let them understand what the experience feels like not to understand a word, and train them, teach them to go and pull out their dictionary and use their dictionary to find the definition.
One of the things that happens, which we haven't really emphasized enough, is that when you collide with words for which you do not have a definition, words you do not understand the meaning of, not only do you go mentally blank, you can actually get quite drowsy and begin to fall asleep. That's why folk read themselves asleep of a nighttime. You know, they go past all these words, don't quite get it, and they'll try and figure out what it might mean based on the structure of the sentence. Typically what they end up doing is inventing a definition which is not necessarily correct. So don't sabotage yourself on this point. It's critically important, and for your child. And when your child understands the importance of it, they will not goof on that.
Absolutely agree. Please do not try and invent a definition in the context of the sentence or the context of the paragraph that you're reading this word in. Too many times, I mean, I've sabotaged myself by doing that. I have read past words that I did not understand, and I defined them according to the context in which they were in. And some of them, I just got completely wrong. I just got completely wrong, and I was stuck with a wrong definition for God knows how many years until I finally learned about these barriers to learning. And I actually pulled out a dictionary and looked up the word and was flabbergasted to find out that I'd been using it incorrectly all these years. And I just was actually quite embarrassed. But so please, don't read something in context. If you don't know what it is, take out a dictionary and look it up. Okay, learning barrier number 3. Maintaining the balance between theoretical knowledge and practical or physical experience. This is very, very important. It actually happened to be my personal hobby horse. And have you ever wondered why you ran into a brick wall while studying? That's because you did not have the proper balance between theoretical knowledge and practical experience, which is another essential for optimum learning. I would just want you to imagine trying to ride a horse by reading a book but never actually getting on a horse.
Or trying to learn to ride a horse.
Or trying to learn to ride a horse anyway, yes. You can claim to know about riding a horse, but until you actually get on a horse, you cannot say that you actually have learned how to ride a horse. Take my word for it, folks. I've been on horses many, many years. There is no way you can read about riding a horse. You have to actually get on there and learn how the animal works, or sometimes doesn't. So too much theory or too much practical experience can cause strife when your child is trying to learn. And Maria Montessori was very aware of this and incorporated it into her teaching method 100 years ago. That's 100 years ago, folks. This lady was observant enough of children to understand that you needed to balance theoretical knowledge with practical experience. So a young child being taught arithmetic or phonics is never just given the symbols and told to work with them. No, no, no. That child is given 3D physical objects to manipulate and work with. They are then transitioned over time into the more abstract of two-dimensional symbols such as numbers and letters of the alphabet. So what are the signs and symptoms of a student or your child actually not being able to or not having the balance between theoretical knowledge and practical experience in place? And that is, the student begins to feel dead, bored, squashed, solid, and eventually they can feel very, very absent. This is all the result of pulling in mental mass to try and balance or handle the imbalance of too much theory. In other words, too much book learning, basically. reading a book, two-dimensional type on a two-dimensional page, reading, time after time after time. After a while, you just have to have those physical objects in front of you. You just have to go out and actually manipulate the physical universe so that you can get some of that practical experience, so you can understand what you've been reading. So there's your child. They're reading, and they're just feeling bored, dead. They just go absent. They're just, oh, please, I need something to work with. In the case of too much mass, your student or your child can go absent due to being overwhelmed. So how do you remedy this? Ask your child, did you learn anything new in school today? If yes, then ask, did the teacher give you physical objects or pictures to work with so that you could understand the lesson? If not, then take out some appropriate physical objects or grab some pictures, get on the internet or open up a book or whatever, and look at the pictures and go through the lesson again. But one of the things I do when I am tutoring students is we do a lesson on conversion from metrics to English units, and I always have measuring cups and rulers and spoons and everything else so that they have the physical object that they can actually look at and hold and say, oh yeah, well that measures to that and that equals that. And they understand it. They really, really get it. But the better thing to do is to actually prevent this barrier from happening at all. And that is to use, anytime you are introducing new information, use physical objects such as rulers, measuring cups, like I just said, blocks, modeling clay, play money. When you're introducing your children to the concept of money, use play money to get them, to give them something to play with, so to speak. Or at least give them pictures. In other words, if you're talking about the moon, the planets, the pyramids, I'm trying to think of something that you obviously can't bring into your home, but give them pictures to look at least. For any new information you're introducing to your child, please give them something physical to work with. You can also devise experiments that can demonstrate the principles you want your child to understand. Just like in science class, you had science and then you had your lab. And the whole idea was for you to take the knowledge from the class and apply it in the lab so you could understand the principles you were trying to be taught.
Good. Well, that's a good program for... We'll be back next week with more information on the other barriers to comprehension that prevent learning. I'm sure that you got a lot out of this today. Now, you can get more information here on our website at How to Learn Easily, and also in our book, How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension, which you can get information on at the website. So, thanks for listening today, and we will see you back here, same place, same time, next week for further information on the barriers to comprehension.